Hello, Pisces. Welcome to your 2015 birthday reading. My name is Eric Francis, your astrologer for the next hour or so, maybe the next few years or so, here to tell you a bit about the action in the sign Pisces and all throughout the zodiac as it influences your sign. There's lots of things going on in this reading, which will be in three parts. I am going to cover that incredible new moon that spanned between Aquarius and Pisces. It was right on the line. It was one of the most unusual astronomical events I have ever seen, reading astrology, a new moon that started so close to the end of one sign that the new moon was still at its very peak as it moved into the next sign. A mere 2 minutes or so later, I'm going to cover the collection of planets in Pisces. These include Neptune, the modern ruling planet of Pisces, Chiron, a planet that is well associated with Pisces and the mutable signs and is a long-term visitor, as is Neptune, Borysici, a planet that in many ways embodies all of the themes inherent in Pisces, another slow-moving planet in your sign, and Nessus, yet another slow-moving planet in your sign. The concurrent theme here of all of these is that the slow movers have shown up in Pisces together and in force, and Pisces is a focus of activity in the zodiac right now for everyone, but especially for you. I'll also look at the role of Jupiter in your chart. Jupiter's now in Leo. It's about to change signs. Well, over the summer, it will change signs into Virgo. The relationship angle of your chart. There's also going to be a very interesting final of three, Venus conjunct Mars in Virgo in your relationship house. So in addition to lots of Pisces, there is an emphasis on Virgo, which is your relationship area. And then I'm going to look at the role of Saturn in your life, the planet that is about basically getting things done, which is now very well placed in your 10th house. I will explain what that's about. And the Uranus-Pluto square, the big scene backdrop astrology that was all the raging news in 2011 and 2012. It's been somewhat forgotten. While the sun is in Pisces this year, I believe next week, actually, I'm recording, by the way, on Monday, the 2nd of March. We will experience the last of seven Uranus-Pluto squares. Again, while the sun's in Pisces, so that gets some resonance with the sun's trip through Pisces. It's part of your solar return chart, but I'm going to talk about the long-range outlook of Uranus and Pluto in their signs. I'll do my best to translate all of this into human English for you. And if I fail to do so at any point, there is going to be a conference call associated with this reading where you can say, oh, by the way, you said you were going to put that in English, and it still sounded like astrologies. And I'm sure some other things are going to come up along the way here, but let's start with that new moon. The reason, in my mind, that this new moon was so exciting for Pisces is that the new moon began in the 12th house of your chart. The sign before one's own sign is this special region of the zodiac relative to everyone's sign. So, if, for example, you're a Gemini, then the one before you is Taurus. In the case of Pisces, the sign before your sign is Aquarius, and so Aquarius acts in a way like a veiled, hidden region of your life, of your chart, and so this new moon begins in this veiled world behind the scenes, and it emerges into full consciousness in your life. And so there is this sensation of movement from the unconscious to the conscious. There's a sensation of movement from somewhere that's hidden into somewhere that is available, revealed, conscious, there is a sensation of subject matter that might manifest in dreams on one day, manifesting in reality, in physical live reality, another day. In a sense, there is something very Piscean going on with this new moon. There is something about how we live in very Piscean times, where the unmanifest world, the invisible world, is every bit as important as the visible world. We do a lot of meeting in this secret dimension called the internet, this alternate reality. We are spending a lot of time communicating in these very unusual telepathic devices that we are toting around wherever we go, communicating over an invisible telecommunications network. Kind of wild. And so what this new moon highlights is the relationship between the unseen world and the world that we can look at and see for what it is. And this is a recurring theme with Pisces, and especially with Neptune in Pisces, which you might sum up as respect for the unseen, respect for the invisible, respect for what is subtle, respect for what has the ability to penetrate the line between two seemingly starkly separated aspects of reality, but when you come down to it, they're much closer than it may seem. And this is part of the life story of anyone with a strong Pisces chart, be it sun or moon or rising sign or even a concentration of planets in Pisces, that those with strong Pisces and their charts live as if they have one foot in the dream time and one foot in what is thought of as physical reality, consensus reality. And so Pisces always walks that line. Pisces is always able to tune into this alternate dimension of reality. And for those with strong Pisces in their charts, as you have, it's necessary to lead the way on respect for the invisible, respect for the unseen, for acknowledgement that not everything can be proven, especially things of a Pisces nature, which so carefully depend upon things like faith and appreciation of beauty, on subtle and intuitive levels of understanding. None of those things can be proven, and rationalists, some of whom are Pisces people in reaction against the unseen world, Pisces people need, I think, to lead the way on respect and to demonstrate to others the value of that respect. There's a reason why we would not, for example, diss and dismiss things we don't understand. And I think making friends with not understanding and making friends with the unknown is one of those things that is so essential and also potentially so overwhelming to those born with a strong Pisces chart. And so there's a calling in Pisces to make peace with the unknown and to recognize that we are part of a much larger polyverse, you might say, where in truth anything is possible, and yet to activate that can take a pretty evolved level of consciousness to be able to, you know, tap in to that potential. And I'm going to do my best to give you some tools or make aware, bring to awareness tools that already exist. So one thing we get with this new moon is the blending of Aquarius and Pisces, and that is a kind of a starting metaphor for the the life that you are living now, that there is something being called out from behind the scenes and brought forward into your waking world. And there may be many, many metaphors for that. And what's interesting is when that new moon ingressed Pisces, sun of the moon simultaneously within 2 minutes of one another, ingressed Pisces, something that I and a research assistant have not been able to find any examples of any time in recent history, probably going back centuries, does not happen, but it did. The two were conjunct a planet called Nessus, a new discovery, only 22 years old. A centaur planet, much like Chiron, one of two centaurs in Pisces right now. And let's, you know, while I am going to cover all these planets, I want to first pay some homage to Nessus and the main implication I see in this planet for you. And then we might come back to it, because I think that everything else is going to support this particular case. But with Nessus, the overriding theme is accountability. Melanie Reinhart, in her delineation of Nessus, really the first delineation of Nessus to really get it, that's often the case with Melanie, she said, oh, this is about where the buck stops. Now, the buck is not a dollar. The buck is the buckhorn in a poker game, and the buckhorn was passed around the table, and whoever got the buck would deal. So when one has the buck, one deals. And if with Nessus the buck stops here, then that means that you are the one who gets to deal. And one of the things you may be getting to deal with is a lot of collective karma from the past. Aquarius, in addition to being your 12th house, remains Aquarius, and so what may be emerging are the consequences of group actions or the consequences of things that groups have not taken care of, and the net effect may be that you are dealing with a lot of stuff that is not necessarily entirely your responsibility, but as it works out, the buck has stopped with you. Now, with the buckhorn, you can always pass the buck. That's where the expression comes from. You get the buckhorn, you don't want to deal, so you pass the buck. But if we're living under the guidance of Nessus, the motto for Pisces would be, the buck stops here, which means that you are here to take responsibility and to make sure that in the future responsibility is taken. And this can be a lot of work, since we do happen to live in a world of buck passers. People love to pass the buck and not deal and pretend and make believe that things are not their responsibility. And in a way, you could say that passing the buck is the story of the world in which we live. And as many things wind up in what is often called the dustbin of the zodiac, I call it the delta of the zodiac, where all the tributaries that flow into the river and the river itself all flow into the river delta. That is Pisces. That is the inland waterway that leads to the ocean. And you can think of Pisces as being that place, that special place where ocean meets river and where all things flow. And so you're getting a lot of this right now. There's a lot of collective karma that is coming in your direction. And I think that the most important thing you can do is see that for what it is and not let yourself be overwhelmed by that fact, but rather use your resources and use your intelligence and use your abundant experience to make the choices you need to make, to set your life up the way that you need to set it up, and to make sure that while you are busy taking responsibility, that the lines of accountability extend forward from there, and that you ensure that others in your life do what is their responsibility to do. Now, I say this all knowing that it's not very Pisces to do this. It just isn't. It's not the thing that Pisces thinks that it was born to do. Speaking as someone with four planets in Pisces, I have a little more than just the sun in Pisces. And so I know what it's like to want to, you know, do a couple of bong hits and play guitar for 4 hours. Ah, that's a great thing. That's very Pisces. I also know what it's like to have, you know, Chiron in Pisces, as many of people listening do, born in the 1960s. And there is that, when the centaurs show up, there is that heightened level of responsibility for clarity and heightened level of need for organization, and with Nessus in particular, for accountability. And this will come up as a theme in the second portion of the reading when I talk about Saturn in Sagittarius and the other slow movers in other parts of the chart. That theme will be reinforced many times over. So to say that again, it is the most Pisces of times and the least Pisces of times. It is the most Pisces of times in that there is this wild emphasis of slow-moving planets gathering right in Pisces, and it is the least Pisces of times because some of those planets are calling you out of everything that you think of as being Piscean. And yet, the overarching purpose of all this, as far as I can see it, is to make sure that you actually do get to experience your creative plans, to become the artist able to make their art. And that always requires a support structure of some kind. It requires a lot of accountability. It requires an honest and concerted effort to get things right. And so there may be, depending on who you are, a long list of things that you're not interested in that you may suddenly have to find that you are interested in, that you give yourself a reason to take interest, you give yourself a reason to do it well, and you might very well need to identify competent others, but you're still in the role of making sure that everything is fulfilled, that everything happens the way that it should happen. Because with Nessus in your sign now for 18 years, it really is true that the buck stops with you. And that is a beautiful thing, and the buck has to stop somewhere. And if we might consider the possibility that this energy, this archetype that we call Pisces, which is about unification, unity, all things coming back to their source, this thing we call Pisces is about living in contact with this other thing that is sometimes referred to as God or the intelligent universe, that Pisces is about tuning into inspiration and purpose of making beauty. That shows up as well. And yet the special role of applying all this, of making it real, of being idealistic, but also being practical, you see, of not sacrificing your ideals. Neptune is not going to let you do that. Certainly, Chiron is not going to let you sacrifice your ideals. But now comes what you might think of as the cost of those ideals, the responsibility associated with those ideals, which is being clear enough, smart enough, strong enough, committed enough, dedicated enough, willing to work enough, willing to iron out all the issues that humans have about cooperation around you, and holding yourself to a very high standard for clarity now are incumbent upon you. And if you are able to move in this direction, if you are able to do this, the rewards can be immense, because great things are possible, but great things do not happen by accident. Great things happen because people rise to the occasion. Okay, so with that said, let's continue on with Neptune in Pisces. This is a relatively recent arrival. I've got an ephemeris cast here for all these planets that have been manifesting in Pisces, and Neptune made its very first appearance in Pisces. It looks like in early 2012, I need to tune this ephemeris up and go to a four-month per cycle ephemeris. Let's see here. I want to refine that a little bit and give you an accurate date when Neptune arrived. Okay, so now we've got that was in mid 2011 was the initial arrival of Neptune in Pisces, and then that takes a few months to set in. Neptune retrograded back into Aquarius and then went back into Pisces in 2012. And so this is one of those 2012-era things and will be one of your kind of permanent souvenirs of the 2012 era. And this was the end of Neptune in Aquarius, which was in many ways an agonizing transit because it highlighted the limitations that you were feeling. And at the same time, it basically fostered a profound level of faith to live through, you know, maybe 15 years of Neptune in Aquarius. And then Neptune arriving in Pisces was the fulfillment of something. And at the same time, it was also an invitation to really take up your highest ideals and to be clear about the world that you want and the world that you want to live in. And this is going to go on for a while. Neptune will remain in Pisces through, it looks like, 2025, possibly 2026. So we're looking at, you know, that's another basically 11 years of Neptune in Pisces. And that means that Neptune will go over your sun, if it has not already, and all of your Pisces planets or your rising sign and additional planets in Pisces. And there will be this direct, now no longer indirect, encounter with Neptune energy. And like all slow-moving planets, there is the possibility of incredible promise. There is almost always some kind of a crisis associated with the arrival of a slow-moving planet, depending, it may peak. And with Neptune, the crisis is likely to be one of manifesting your ideals. And it is simply not going to be enough that you have ideals. There is a time and place to be starry-eyed and to think only good things, and this is not one of them. Rather, this is a time to embody your ideals in a bold way and to take the lead of other planets supporting Neptune's position in your sign to be highly pragmatic about those ideals. That may mean working in relatively small ways. It may mean designing things in a way where you experiment and build and then replicate the experiment and build. There is the need to do the thing that is opposite the thing that Neptune so often does, which is to put people to sleep. For you, Neptune must serve as an awakening influence. And while there are many other awakening influences in your life, it is essential that you take Neptune itself as an awakening influence, unlike what most other people would take it as, which is a sleepy time type influence, a who cares about responsibility type influence, I will live in a fantasy world type of influence. For you, for Pisces, that must completely reverse itself into this is the time of fulfillment of your calling, and your calling is something that calls you and which you must answer. Okay, now I'm going to come back to the Neptune in Pisces when we get into Saturn in Sagittarius, because the two will meet and you will see complete this story very nicely. But let's move on to Chiron in Pisces. Chiron's journey in Pisces goes back to, that would be, Chiron's early name was 1977 UB. That's what it was first known as. 1977 UB arrives in, well, it actually, as far as I understand, arrived in 2010, Possibly, yeah, that was on 4/20, 2010, the day of the Deepwater Horizon oil rig explosion. That happened within 24 hours of that. And so we got this massive reminder of the need to take care of the oceans and to take care of what Chiron is a specialist in, which is the technicalities, the specifics, the science of, the documentation of. And we began Chiron in Pisces with an enormous crisis of the oceans, which called attention to a crisis of the ocean as millions of barrels of crude oil spilled into the Gulf of Mexico. This obviously was a source of incredible anguish and pain for anyone with a sensitivity to water, which you have, and I think it should stand as a reminder of the fragility of the existence that we have and the need, as is so often reminded by Chiron, to take care of the details, to take care of the specifics, to be able to document what is done, to be able to have data to refer to. Now, I may be the only person who associates Chiron with the accumulation of data, but I've seen a lot of reasons to add this to the delineation, and in some ways, it is so foundational that it addresses almost every other aspect of what Chiron is about, such as healing and growth and transition points in life. And Chiron's presence in your sign, now approximately halfway over, amazingly so, it is a 9-year transit or 8-year transit, but it's still too short for those of us who love Chiron and love Pisces, especially loving them together. The message here is know what you want to do, break it down into steps, and be specific. Now, Chiron also is indicative of a usually fairly massive transition in life. I know that a great many people listening have their natal Chiron in Pisces. If you're born in the 1960s, that is very likely to be true, depending on when, the beginning and the very end. There's a little bit of ambiguity, but through the heart of the 60s, that was Chiron in Pisces. And even if you don't have it as a natal placement, you have it as an honorary placement now because it is such a long-term transit. And this is a rite of passage, I think. One of the clearest, simplest things you can say is that Chiron's presence represents an accelerated evolutionary leap to a new phase in one's life. The thing about these evolutionary leaps to a new phase in one's life is they can come with revealing of the complications of the past. And so often Chiron will bring up a tremendous amount of unfinished business that has not been attended to. This may be in relationships, it may be in association with your health, it may be in association with your entire approach to existence. There may be things that you were in denial of, a kind of a classic theme of Pisces, that are now being rapidly reversed and antidoted by the presence of Chiron in your sign. And so we think of the kind of meta themes of Chiron, one of which I think is specifics and documentation. Really, anything associated with Chiron will tend to either be self-documenting or benefit from being documented. That includes, for example, past Chiron transits. That includes the story of, if you don't have access to those transits, how things got to be the way they are today. So if you're dealing with a situation of any kind that you recognize as a kind of eruption of the need to go to the next level, a sudden impulse, be it voluntarily or not, to grow, change, and transform, which will come with this blazing wake the fuck up type of message, get a grip type of message, you know you've got Chiron at work, and you can be sure that if you trace this history back, if you take this one step at a time and go back to the roots, which you may discover before you were born, you will have something clear that you can work with, and you will have a point of orientation. And the thing to know about Chiron transits is that while they may be inconvenient, they may be challenging, and they will tend to be more inconvenient and more challenging the less you've done during previous Chiron transits. And now you've got a big one, be that Chiron conjunct the moon, conjunct the sun, conjunct the ascendant, conjunct something important. If you're listening to this reading, that is the invitation to radical awareness, to pay attention, and to understand the history and to document. Chiron will also, in the process of that, reveal or come with a plan of action. It will come with a series of steps that you can take. And the important thing is that you break those steps down and that you take those steps one step at a time and that you be in a state of continuous, ongoing review. The thing about Chiron is that it is nothing if not the most practical influence in astrology. And that practical influence runs a cross current to the often impractical nature, idealistic nature, visionary and artistic nature, or space out nature of Pisces. Since you add Chiron into the mix, and it is this, it grants and compels the need for focalization, for clarity, for raising awareness. And if any one influence in astrology is the very antithesis of denial, that would be Chiron. In the presence of Chiron, denial is simply not an option. It's just not going to work. It will backfire. And so the antidote for denial is awareness, understanding, documentation, history, clarity. You may find that you have to be unusually assertive with yourself and with the people around you, and I suggest you get used to that fact, that with embodying the energy of Chiron, you become what Barbara Marciniak, a Pleiadian channel from days of yore, called a systems buster. That is the beauty of Chiron, is that it is going to find the flaw in the system, and it will reveal that flaw, and then it will endow you with the intelligence to be able to deal with that. There's something about systems and Chiron, this in part because Chiron is so closely associated with the notion of holistic consciousness, which is a whole system type of thinking, and Pisces, if any one sign represents the whole system, that would be Pisces. Now we've got these two kind of different polarities of the whole system working in concert. A beautiful thing. You have a lot of potential with this one transit, and it ain't the only transit that is saying something very similar, that is reinforcing the concept of what you can do, what you must do, and what you want to do all in one kind of gesture. Okay, so speaking of planets that are incredibly Piscean in nature, there's one that is just a gem that is not commonly discussed by astrology, as many of these minor planets are left by the wayside, though Chiron tends to get the most ink of the minor planets. But this one is called Borysesi. And you could ask a lot of people before you hear of somebody who's heard of Borysesi, and the first person who said yes would probably be a Kurt Vonnegut fan, because the name Borysesi comes out of the Kurt Vonnegut book, Cat's Cradle. And the theme of Cat's Cradle is truth and lies, basically. In some ways, as Vonnegut sums it up, it's about the lies of religion and the truths of science and why we need to assess these things for what they are. And you know what Vonnegut is saying in Cat's Cradle is that, in his view, the lies of religion, like Jesus walked on water, if you happen to question these kind of stories, You wonder what was beneath the water, or, you know, did someone make that up, for example? And the truths of science, like the atomic bomb, are very much in contradiction to one another, and that the truths of science make the lies of religion seem innocuous. Now, they're not, but he was interested in this brutally honest assessment of truth and lies. And this is what I think that Borsisi is speaking to on the spiritual level. Borsisi is calling everyone who tunes into the concept of Pisces, which is your destiny, and anyone else who is seeking truth, who is seeking some sense of wholeness, to really look clearly at what they determine to be true and what they determine to be a lie, what is taken on faith and what is taken with evidence, and basically to raise the standard for what you believe. In my thinking, the key word of Borsisi involves belief. That is a key word of Pisces, I believe. But what Borsisi does, in a way similar to Chiron, it flips Pisces inside out, and it asks the questions of belief. It asks the questions of where we really need to check for more proof. It asks the questions of why it is we accept certain things on faith and not other things. It is asking many questions, many inconvenient questions, you see. And this year, there are going to be two Chiron-Borsisi conjunctions. They're going to merge as one energy. And they're both doing something very similar, which is they are fully utilizing the creative and faith-generating capacity of Pisces, but they are insisting that this power be reversed and converted into something that is just not simply about accepting things as they are or denying them, but rather questioning and focusing that question into the point of a spear and piercing what needs to be questioned. Now, this is not a popular activity. People would rather turn the pages of a magazine and look at all the pretty models and look at all the ads and imagine what kind of shoes they want or what movie they're going to see. This is normally where Pisces is lodged, a world of fantasy. But one of the things that's happening now in the times we are living, as the television age basically entirely gives way to the digital age, we are in the very last throes of the TV age, and we are now well into the digital age. As with all ages, there is an overlap between them. And the digital age is the onrush energy coming on much stronger. And the television age, which is basically the age of pure fantasy, is ending. And what the digital age is invoking is the need for reality, the need for proof, the need for involvement, the understanding that there is documentation possible. And I understand that you could look at the digital age and say, wow, what a complete wasteland. And yet, it is a complete wasteland that is demanding involvement. And so there is a deeper message than, oh, just how, you know, what bullshit this all is, people posting what they're eating for dinner on their Facebook page. There is still that need that is much stronger, I think, than the specific content of what is being discussed, to involve oneself. And the need to check whether something is true, for example. How many times have you just said, oh, I'm going to check whether that's true. I'm going to look that up in Wikipedia. I'm going to Google that. The impulse to check whether something is true. The impulse to use the digital realm to have a real experience, not merely clicking on a petition, but rather your own impulse to convert your digital experience into something real, into real contact, into actual action, into knowing the specific thing you need rather than just some general thing that might fit the purpose. Ah, the internet gives us the ability, the digital age gives us the ability to get it right. And as with any environment and with any era of medium, there are going to be people who always take it on the lowest common denominator. For you, there is something, I think, quite opposite going on, which is an overwhelming need to get real. And that overwhelming need to get real is so carefully woven with the need to honor your ideals that the two are inseparable. And so this is a very special time in your life. And I will concede from experience and from just processing this astrology, right? Just trying to get these metaphors working together in a way that provides that four-dimensional image or five-dimensional image. This is challenging. This is requiring daily devotion, daily activity. It is requiring admitting that you don't know whether something is going to work, but having to have enough faith that it will work that you keep coming back to it every single day. And you do it. The fantasy is not enough. The fantasy will not satisfy you. It is the reality of experience, of getting it right, of manifesting your dreams that you are seeking. And in this, every factor of the astrology that is going on as it relates to Pisces is working for you in a very potent and helpful way. I'm going to come back to some of those other symbols, other archetypes, other metaphors at work in the next section. I'll catch you then in a digital instant.